My computer, unfortunately, is on the blink, so I didn't get a chance to look up something in regard to this famous passage from Genesis. I mean, this is so important among the Jews, it even has a special title. J.K., do you remember in Hebrew what the sacrifice of Isaac is? I can't remember. Well, in any case, do it in Wikipedia. You know, just type in the sacrifice of Isaac, and something will come out, the Hebrew phrase. Because this was really significant for the Jews. But I want to talk about this passage from Mark. So Lent is built the same way over the three-year cycle. It always begins with the temptation narrative, and then the second Sunday of Lent is always a transfiguration story. So that's what we have today. So what's going on here? I don't know. I don't think anybody knows for sure. But a lot of people have said, well, this was God's assurance after the temptation that everything was going to turn out all right because this dazzling white clothes were what you wore in the eschaton in the last days, you know, when God had closed down the whole operation. So everybody was running around glowing in these clothes. I don't think that's right. It's not a reward that we're dealing with here. As I've said over and over, and I thought this was one of the two major insights I've ever had in my life, God neither rewards nor does God punish. God simply loves. That's it. Because if you read the Hebrew Bible attentively, you'll see God does not treat us like little kids, which is the model of the reward-punishment scheme. You know, if you're nice, we'll go to the ice cream shop. No, that is infantile and infantilizing. So what is going on here? Is to say that God simply loves, love is a grace, love is a gift, and it's up to us to accept it or not. It's not something you have to pay for or get paid for. You simply respond to your understanding of who God is and what God is like, and you even either accept it or reject it. And punishment is just a consequence of saying, no, God, I'm not interested. What we call reward is precisely the opposite. Yeah, God, this is the real deal. This is what I want. This is what I want to live out in my life. And so even though we die, God's still hanging in with us. You know? God is still present. God is still there restoring us after death. To whatever destiny we have chosen. Again, the hallmark of the relationship between God and us human beings, different from that in Islam and in a bunch of other religions, is that God takes us seriously. God takes our freedom seriously. Now, that raises all kinds of problems, I believe. Because who of us have ever grown up in a household where we were taken seriously all the time and our freedom respected? I was not. My way or the highway. You know, that's a regular paternal injunction, you know. But again, if you stand back and look at that, the ego keeps getting in the way and occluding our vision. What's in it for me? Is not the final question that is supposed to be asked by religious people. You know. Is this the truth or is this not the truth? And if I don't think it's the truth, then that's all right. If I think it's the truth, then that's all right. And we act differently in those two situations. But God is not going to turn us into little kids bitching and moaning about how unfair life is or whatever. Life is unfair. I mean, JFK was famous, probably a bit of Irish wisdom, in constantly saying that life was unfair. Who's got a fair deal? None of us, I don't think. And the reason we haven't is that we're with all these other buggered up people who are themselves not free and can't abet our freedom. And this is where God comes into the picture. Convincing us in faith that the square deal, the mercantile arrangement, is not the final relationship we have with God. Now, I have heard that ever since I was a little kid. Again, to repeat an anecdote, which when I first heard it, really threw me. In the seminary, that unfortunate 7 years of my life, we had a Jesuit who we really thought was breathing. Most of them were not sure whether they were breathing or not. They would show up in class and they look kind of moribund. But this guy, you know, he's the youngest of the faculty. And during the summer, since we had to be kept away from the beaches, or the bitches, as the Chicagoans constantly say. So he went up to what we call the villa in Wisconsin. Said, you know, when I die, I'll be lying in my coffin, but I will have prepared a list of every baptism, every confession, every wedding, every confirmation, every instruction. And I'm going to say, here, God, now what are you going to do about all this? I was appalled, even in my naivete, I was appalled at that. Again, that kind of mercantilization of religion. But it's not unusual. I mean, we have this all the time. God, why am I suffering like this? You know, as if we know what's in the mind of God. So, the onus, in a very real sense, is on us. The onus of the reciprocity that's supposed to exist between us and God. You know? The freedom that love always bestows on people. Love is the only thing that makes people free. Real love is the only thing that is a truly free action of us human beings. And it is liberating. It is liberating. So this scheme said, well, Jesus had a tough time, but then he really won out in the end. I mean, look at all the goodies that he was able to collect after, you know. No. That's, as I said, it's infantile to construe things in that fashion. It denies our freedom. It denies our responsibility for living our own lives, really. It denies the God of the Hebrew Bible, the God of Jesus, the God of that whole wonderful tradition from the Hebrew Bible and the New Testament.